Welcome, Reverend Judith Malionik and Deacon Paul Carney.
Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
Deacon Paul, to start, you were raised in Troy and in the church. Could you tell us how Christian religious life in the city and the region has changed since then?
Sure. I grew up in what we call South Troy, which is, just for clarification, is anything south of the canal. But yes, I grew up in South Troy in the 60s. At that time in the city, there was at least 18 churches in Troy. It seemed that there was a church on every corner. Each church was sort of the epicenter of each individual neighborhood. Most of the Roman Catholic churches had a school attached to it. So there was also, children around for the grammar schools, St. Joseph's in South Troy, St. Mary's up around your neighborhood, St. Anthony's in the central part of the city. But what I'm trying to say is there was a much greater community sense with each and every church.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a steady decline in religiosity and church attendance across the country. And then very recently, a very sudden drop because of the pandemic. What was it like to have to shutter St. John's?
Yeah, the day that we had that call that we had to close the church, it was like I was in shock. It was like being in a car accident, and it took me a couple of hours before I could cry. It was just such a stunning thing to have to happen to the church. I'm actually about the last person who ever walks into a new kind of technology. And so I felt like I was like a hobbit being called out of the glen onto a very unlikely adventure. But suddenly there I was having to do things online, having to get onto Zoom, and doing a lot of things to keep this community together in the midst of having to close our church.
When did that call come? And I think you guys reopened in early September, right? But what were the exact dates?
I think it was March 16th we had to close. It was halfway during Lent. And so Easter was coming up in a few weeks. And so that was the point at which we had to close the church. And then we opened up mid-September.
Yeah, and to talk about how you pivoted in that, what would the 6, 5, 4, something like that month span, there were live streamed videos of Sunday services at St. John's. There was a little tab on your website called Online Worship, and you guys were there participating in the music, the preaching, the ceremony, but in front of empty pews. Could you talk about any feedback you've received and how people felt being separated physically, and also how was it for you? Was that strange, preaching to no one physically?
Well, yes and no. It's funny, I had to really focus on believing that the congregation was there, because I had to be convincing in that way. And for me, it was important for me to believe that they were there, just on the other side of that. It was a cell phone, actually, just on the other side of that. And as people of faith, part of our skill is that we have a capacity to believe in things that are unseen. And so that is what I had to do. I did have some feedback from various people. They were really appreciative that we were making this effort and that we were bringing worship to them in a way that almost normalized the event. Although I heard from one parishioner who's tuned in on Easter morning, a very faithful parishioner here, and he said, to have that cross go down the aisle and there be no one in the pews, it was so difficult, because of course on Easter morning we are bursting with song and celebration and overflowing with flowers and people. So it was really hard for him to have that initial experience of tuning in to an empty church, especially on Easter. But there were 250 people who tuned in that day. And he watched to the end because, there, of course, there's nowhere else he wanted to be on Easter except in that beautiful sanctuary, even if it was closed.
Is 250 people more than the normal capacity of St. John's?
Oh, it's certainly, we usually just have 100 people on a Sunday. It's not a, a large congregation in that way. So yeah, 250 was good for us, yeah.
What you're describing is a sort of parallels the changes in community that the secular world, that all of the world is experiencing as our lives become increasingly, you know, mediated by technology. Christian televangelism and radio preaching, which are actually not new. They've been around since the 40s and the 50s. They've definitely eclipsed traditional church going in the United States. Do you think that that's a good thing? And what do you think the differences are?
Well, it is a two-sided reality. On the one hand, people are tuning in and they are hearing good music and they're hearing a good sermon. But I think what's illusory about that is that they are not involved in community. So they're not really being asked to do much, and they're not needing to volunteer, and they're not getting involved in other people's lives in that way. So it's a kind of religiotainment, is what it's been called. People are not being asked to share their faith. They're not being asked to reach out to the poor. And like, what happens when you stop watching the show? Does anybody notice? Would anybody call? If you go to the hospital, would anybody visit you while you're there? Who would know and who would care to come? Those kinds of things only happen in community.
The pandemic has been extremely stressful and brought a lot of hardships for, you know, tens of millions of Americans. How has St. John's reached out to support its parishioners?
What Mother Judith and I have done is we have a parish directory, close to 200 people. So every so often we would each take a turn and go through the entire parish directory and call each and every parishioner to find out, are you okay? Is there anything we can do for you? Is there anything that you need prayer for? That was one of the ways that we would reach out. And of course, it was very difficult to visit someone that was in the hospital because most of the hospitals were locked down also. And they even wouldn't let clergy in.
And what about in regards to housing insecurity, food insecurity? I don't know the specific needs of your parishioners, but has the church, I know that you guys run a food pantry. How has the church helped the community, you know, the physical needs?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have not actually been able to do the monthly food pantry in the way that we did it. And so now we just prepare bags of food. And people call, they find out about us. We're telling about it on the radio now. So people can come by, make an appointment, and come by and get a bag of food. We've been doing that with several bags of food a week. If people need something in the from the thrift store, they can come by from appointment, even though we don't actually have a thrift store open. There have been times we've helped out, especially parishioners with special needs. Fortunately, in this parish so far, everyone has remained housed, and people have managed to pull through in terms of their employment. But I know that that is not, that this community has been very fortunate in that way. And we have been working with social service agencies in various ways by making additional contributions than we normally would.
And just to finish, if you all had any, you know, burning anecdotes or opinions, observations about religious life during and since the pandemic.
The one thing I would love to do is simply bless your listeners. Can I do that?
I'm sure they won't object.
Okay, well, here we go. Dear God, I just want to bless this wonderful group of listeners who tune into Independent News and want to find a fuller truth through that. I pray that they experience your presence and that they find that their lives are rich in community and generosity. And I ask this through your great love. Amen.
Thank you very much, Deacon Paul Carney and Reverend Judith Melionik.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Miles.